Hello, and welcome to On Staging, a discussion podcast highlighting community theater in Calgary and the surrounding area. I'm Kyle Gould, and I'm overjoyed to welcome back to the podcast for her third time, Kelly Kozak, along with second-time guest Brad Snowden, and first-time guest Ollie Height, because why not make it consecutive? Dudeney Players will present as their final production for the 2023-2024 season, Kelly Kozak's adaptation of Charlotte Chopin's Hansel and Gretel. Kelly is directing this production while Brad and Ollie are performing in the production as Father and Hansel, respectively. Kelly, Brad, and Ollie, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hello.
Nice to meet you for the first time and to see the two of you again. Your production comes up really, really soon. How has it been?
Crazy. We've had to do a lot of juggling with scheduling because there are quite a number of school-aged youth in the production.
Yeah.
So that was a challenge right off the bat because people are busy. Kids have other activities. And we've had a week off for February break, and we just are coming back from a week off for Easter. So,
oh my goodness.
Yeah. Been a bit of a challenge as far as just cramming those rehearsals and making the most out of every single one. So, but going well, you know, as we know, it seems like it's never going to come together. And then all of a sudden it's like, wow, this is actually happening.
And you load in on?
We load in on the 20th.
Yeah.
And open on the 26th.
Wow. So soon, all too soon, everything will be very, very real. Let's go back. Hansel and Gretel, Charlotte Chopin's version of it. What's this all about?
So I was approached by Ed, along with some other people.
And for those who don't know, Ed Sands, who is on the board for Dudeney Players.
He is on the board. He's our treasurer. He's been involved with Dudeney for quite a long time, produced a number of the productions. And so he had sent out an email asking if anybody would be interested in directing something for the upcoming season. This was over a year ago when mm-hmm. I was rehearsing 12th Night. And so the seed was planted in my head and kind of thought, what would I want to do? And then over the course of the next 6 months, just wanted to do something fantasy and fairy tale related, because fairy tales for me was my very first experience of make believe, mm-hmm. and as many others probably as well. And so I wanted to do something that was kind of came from my childhood, that meant something to me. And when looking at different fairy tales, I wanted to do something that wasn't like so overdone. I mean, we see Cinderella all the time, mm-hmm. and we see Alice in Wonderland all the time. And some of my ideas actually came from, oh, this would be a really cool set to do, or this would be a really cool costuming idea. And so what can I incorporate in all of those things? And then Hansel and Gretel came to mind. But I had to find a full-length version that was a little bit different. And so Charlotte's version of the Brothers Grimm kind of fit that bill in a right. lot of ways. There's a lot of other characters that we don't see in the original. The original is like basically Mom, Dad, Hansel, Gretel, and the witch.
Mm-hmm.
So here we have elves, and we have fairies, and we have Ole, the Danish Sandman, who's a very folkloric character.
So before we get into the specifics of the show itself, mm-hmm. were you aware of Charlotte's work before you started looking for a Hansel and Gretel?
Nope.
So it sounds like you were like, I want to do a fairy tale. I would like to do Hansel and Gretel because I want to make a candy house because I'm insane. And and then you started looking. And how did you find Charlotte's work?
Literally Google search. And I'm looking at all these different scripts. And most of them were, you know, 20 minutes long and for, you know, school productions.
Right.
And so then I read this.
I mean, it's not a really long story.
It's not a long story. Right. So, I mean, it's like over and done and that's it.
Yeah,
could be a one act, right?
My copy of it upstairs is 28 pages.
Yeah.
It's, they go, they put down some stones. They don't have stones. They put down bread. They get lost.
Yeah.
Uh-oh, candy house, put in an oven, and now they're gone. You know, now they get out and they run away and the house burns down, the witch goes with it. Yay, they did it, the end.
Yeah, yeah, roll credits.
And I'm assuming you wanted a lot more than that.
I wanted a little bit more storyline than that.
Okay.
And other characters. So the script was interesting enough in the synopsis for me to order it.
Right.
So I ordered it and read it. And the interesting thing about this is that Charlotte died in 1955.
Right, yes.
The play was published in 1956.
Yes.
So she didn't even get to see it really fully staged.
No. I mean, she'd already done it.
She'd workshopped it, yeah. Right? But when I was reading the script, I could tell, no disrespect, I could tell that there was some unfinished business in the script that we, you know, sometimes you don't really see, as you know, when you're working through things and you're like, okay, maybe there's some loose ends here that we need to tie up that she wasn't able to do.
Maybe.
So it felt like
things. I didn't think that Hansel and Gretel was her last work. I thought it was like fourth to last of her works.
But I think that one wasn't, it may have been one of one of the last ones to be published.
This is why they need more of this sort of thing, because there's just, like, you look in Wikipedia, she's a well-deserved artistic director for a theater in Chicago and did a whole bunch of writing in Chicago as well. So she wrote a whole bunch of works that were then adapted and turned into it. And she's considered Goodman Theater in Chicago's most prolific playwright for having had their work on stage. But she was also the artistic director. Nonetheless, she did a lot of stuff, and it was great. And unfortunately, she passed away.
Correct. Yeah. You know, and the humor in the 1950s was quite different, and it reads different today.
I mean, we've already discussed that this season alone with Bullshot Crummond.
Exactly.
So
exactly.
The humor from then is, well, it's predicated for today. So there's a lot of things that are originative and have been built upon to establish today's humor.
Right.
Yeah.
So I kind of did a rewrite and kept the whole feeling of it, kept the idea, because I loved what she incorporated.
Mm-hmm.
I love the fact that she introduced all of these other different characters and made more of a story out of it. So I just kind of adapted it a bit to add some more current humor, things that would be funny to a young audience, and some physical things. And, you know, we've made it a little bit quirky at the same time.
How long did that take you to do?
About 8 months.
Wow.
I think.
That's a lot more time than it took Peter to do the adaptation of Shakespeare.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's because I would do a rewrite, and then I would read it again, and then I would do another rewrite. And then you have other people look at it, and you go, let's just make sure.
Who did you have help you edit it?
I had sent it to some members of the board and had them take a look at it. I sent it to some members of my family. It kind of read parts of that as well. And then I would leave the script for a bit, because I was also working on other shows at the same time.
Yes, so, you have been very busy.
Yeah. So you kind of have to just back away from it and then come back with fresh eyes and go, is this okay? And what do we need to change now? And tie things together, because some of the characters weren't as defined as I would have liked them to. So some of the characters, there were hints of their personalities, but then someone else would have a line that was more fitting for a different character because of that personality. So I kind of just wanted to develop each set of kids, brothers and sisters. There's brothers and sisters of kids who are friends of Hansel and Gretel's, to have each of the defining characters.
Mm-hmm.
So I just kind of worked a lot on that. And I mean, we're still, I think, in rehearsals, as we do, we're like, you know what, this doesn't really quite make sense. Let's change it. Let's take that out, or let's change this.
Okay.
So it's a process, I think, that just is always evolving.
So was it basically a workshop? Were actors able to have some say on line changes and whatnot? Because I know that was a big thing that Dudeney had with the most recent Shakespeare, Henry V. Was that something that happened, or were these set in stone by the time that you brought the cast on board?
It was pretty set in stone, but again, like, during the process, I think even yesterday we changed one of the lines because we realized, as you do, well, it doesn't make sense to put a hook here, so we're not hanging the basket. So now we're saying, let's set the basket.
Oh, okay.
Right, just so it's just subtle things like that. But I mean, I think my actors pretty much know if there's things that they don't feel, there's something that doesn't feel right, or is something not comfortable, let's talk about it. Let's have
a
discussion.
Is that true?
Absolutely, yeah. Yes.
Did you find that occurred a lot, that you had to, when you were making your notes with your regards to creating the character and putting this all together?
Yes, definitely. I think each line that, especially one of the children say, has a lot to do with their character and where they come from and everything. They're very well-defined people.
Oh, absolutely. But did you have any say in changing any of the lines that were being done, or was it an easy process looking at the character's script and then digesting that?
There were a couple lines here and there where I thought, maybe Hansel wouldn't talk specifically like this, or maybe it makes more sense that we go this way instead. But ultimately, I think the script as it was, it's very good.
Well, she's sitting right here, so yes, there's nothing
I'm
you can
complimenting
do about that.
Her yeah. directly yeah. right now. Yes, of course.
Thank you.
How about for you, Brad?
During the read through, and even once we got into the initial blocking, we definitely, as actors, had a chance to change any lines that we thought didn't work or you know might not fit the character.
Did you get to add a whole monologue to the?
I didn't want another monologue, so no.
Okay. Do you have a lot? I mean, the father is not a huge figure in the traditional fairy tale. Is he a huge figure in this production?
He's one of them. Yeah. Father and mother have more of
I like the twist on this version, just because I think the original made the mom be a lot more evil or mean to the children, mm-hmm. where in this one, she's still not the nicest person in the world, but I think she gets under a spell from the witch, which makes her be a lot more evil. And the father just sort of brings everybody closer together and is sort of the reasoning voice behind the whole trying to get mother back on board.
There are a lot more stepmothers in the world of today than there were back when Grimm's Fairy Tales was first written. So the relationship between husband and wife and mother and child has changed considerably as well, to the point where Charlotte literally rewrote these plays, all of these, with the intention of changing the stepmother appearance and whatnot. She gave it a poetic beauty that brings value to young audiences, and her treatment of stepmothers does not accent the cruelty, which is an important outlook today.
Mm-hmm.
The evil witch, in fact, in Hansel and Gretel, it says, is portrayed as a comedy character to teach value there, as opposed to criminal intent. So, you chose Hansel and Gretel. You've been working through it here. Why Hansel and Gretel?
Again, it's just one of the fairy tales that I remember from my childhood that I feel like isn't overdone. And again, an Alberta ballet just happened to do Hansel and Gretel as well, right? So that was ironic. But I love the story. It's a little bit wicked, mm-hmm. obviously. I mean, I do love witches, but we make her comical as well.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, she's cruel. Her intentions are are not the best, but we're doing it in a funny way. So it's just one of those stories that I wanted to create magic and have the whole thing take place in a forest. Like, how cool is that?
I don't know. I'm not your set designer. I think it's daunting excessively. Any story that involves a journey and a long walk that's done on a stage as small as the RPAC makes you wonder, do you have treadmills for the Hansel and Gretel wandering and getting lost? I can't wait to see the difficulty that comes from trying to get a journey into a small, tight, small stage.
You know what's funny is it is such a small, small stage. And when we're on our journey, the house is on stage and then where you would travel to. And if we cross too far, Patrick, who is one of the stage managers, has this Nerf gun. So if we go too far towards the house where we're getting into another area of the thing, he starts shooting us to try to keep us on the one side of the stage. So
oh my goodness.
A treadmill would actually make us look like we're traveling farther. But and again, we always use the audience in the RPAC. So we are using the aisles.
Lots
the
of aisles and wing work. Absolutely. It's just a necessity of it. So you spent 8 months putting this thing together. You sent it off to the board. You got your approval to go forward with it. When was your first production meeting and how much did Dudney have a say in putting together your team for you? Or did they leave that to your own devices to put your team together?
They left that to me.
Or did you Kelly Kozak this again and just take on all the jobs and not rely on other people to do a lot of the work that should be done?
Yeah. There are going to be people laughing when they hear you say that at this podcast, because they know me, people know me, and people who didn't know me before with Dudney are knowing that that's who I am. But I can't do it all. Like I can't, right? I have a set designer. I'm very active, and involved in the decisions or the creative vision of it. Mm-hmm. But I basically, so Dale Fay is my set designer.
Great.
Who's fantastic.
Yeah.
And when I had my first production meeting with Ed, which was maybe in last November.
Okay.
And then told him my idea. I think he was like, okay, you're nuts, but can you be ready by May? And I was like, what? Sure. Okay. Then I had my, I chose my team.
So did you not know when you'd first set up that when this was going to occur?
No, I was last July when he said, can you be ready by May?
Mm-hmm.
Because at that time they were still trying to fill a slot. We thought we were going to do it this fall, depending on another production that was kind of pending, but then they decided to do it in May. So,
wow.
Yeah.
So you got bumped.
So I got bumped. I got bumped up. And then the panic really started. And so then when I first met with Dale Fay and said, here's my vision.
Yeah.
Can we do this? My favorite word ever is absolutely.
Wow.
And she had no qualms about anything. I said, but I want it to be this. But can we do this? And can we do this? And let me add something. And she says, absolutely.
Wow.
And she's delivered an amazing set design.
Absolutely.
Which is still being built. But, you know, I designed all the costumes. I had the costumes in my head.
So you designed all the costumes.
I designed the costumes. I've had people, some have built. I've only made like one piece, I think, for Brad and his little satchel.
Oh, okay.
So I haven't done a lot of sewing, but I've done a lot of prop making. So, but I, you know.
So you're prop master as well?
No.
Okay.
But I am.
But you're making props.
But I am. Yes.
Okay.
Right.
Oh, just be over here, just blinking and nodding.
Yeah. Because I don't know. It's just, you know, and I trust my departments.
Yeah.
Fully.
So sounds like it.
I trust.
As he shakes his head.
I trust my departments, but I also, that's the natural curiosity in me. I like just like to make things and I like to do things and I have a vision of something and it's only a couple things that I'm making for each, you know, but I'm participating because I love to do it.
It's fair.
This isn't a small thing. This isn't.
No, I'm not suggesting that at all. However, I'll get on my soapbox here. When you have your program at the end of the day and it says set designer Dale Fay and it says property master
Donna Eaton,
then those people will have been responsible for those things that they see on stage. And if the directors come in and countermanded whatever that they were going to design and whatever they were going to do with their particular vision, then really shouldn't it say property manager Kelly Kozak and Donna Eaton? Should it not say that? Because at the end of the day, you're the director. Everybody knows that. But you've delegated to those people to do those tasks, and then it's not really their vision on stage, is it?
Well, they, so...
I chuckle because it's awkward.
I know. Yeah. I see what you're saying. But at the same time, we also had a conversation in our last interview, I think, when you had said, and I was silently laughing to myself because you said your pet peeve is when you go to see a production, it's like written by this person, directed by the same person, produced by the same person, acted by the same person, right?
Yeah.
And I said, that's hilarious because I find the opposite. Like if you've written something, how do you give that? Because you're creating all of these characters in your mind. You see how it, at least in my mind, you need to trust 1,000% the person that's going to direct this to know you've written it a certain way, how they're going to do it, right? So
if you want something to stand the test of time, you have to give it to other people.
Correct. For sure. And you have to trust your team. And I trust my team, but my team also understands that if I say, hey, I would like to make a giant foam mushroom, like giant. And they don't know how to do it. They're like, that sounds great. I've never done that before. And I'm like, let me take a stab at that part because you already have another 132 props to find, you know, source, make, whatever. I said, let me help you with that one. I'll see what I can come up with.
Okay. I mean, that's totally fair and valid. When the property master feels that they're overwhelmed by something, you can definitely step in to assist.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, and again, this is just conflict for conflict's sake. I always feel like if it says that person's name, then they should have had the vision and it should be their responsibility at the end of the day. Because there's a lot of directors out there that take that over. They're like, no. This is what I want. And that it's community theater. We all have to work together to create this woven fabric. But anyway, we're back to this. You've had your production meeting. You do have a large group of people associated with you. When was the casting call and how did that look like?
Gosh, auditions were in January.
Yeah.
Were in January. We had a lot of people come out for those 2 days. Every audition slot was completely booked.
Wow.
Every 15 minutes. We had audition slots for 15 minutes for 2 days.
How many people is that? Oh, it's only 2 days. Okay,
it
so that's not
days.
Bad. But 2 days, like 6 to 9 or?
I think we did 5 to 9.
Five. So 4 hours of slots, just doing the quick math on that, that's like 32 auditioners. Yep. Is that about what you had?
Yeah, I think that was about it. We may have squeezed a couple more in.
okay.
as well.
I think it got expanded too, because when I tried to sign up, I think the day I wanted was booked. Mm. And then so you guys...
We added a couple more.
Added it, like started it earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And so...
Which is great.
Yeah. This is not a question I've asked anybody really ever on the podcast. You saw the casting call come out. Were you immediately intrigued and you wanted... And what led you to want to audition for this production?
For myself, I've worked with Kelly now. This is our fifth show, maybe fourth or fifth show together. And I just really enjoy working with her. So I knew Hansel and Gretel was coming up even before the audition notice came out. And I just wanted to make sure that it wasn't the dates, because I'm leaving for Australia in July. So I just wanted to make sure that I didn't know what the dates were
yet. I
think the
show will be done by then. Yeah.
Well, that's why I auditioned.
Absolutely. Yeah. So you worked with Kelly. You really wanted to be under Kelly's direction for this. This is the first time Kelly's directed with Dudney. And so this is a great opportunity.
100%. And also
you to get back at her for all of the stuff she did to you as a performer in your most recent directed production.
No, not at all. No.
No? No. This is great. She was
awesome.
She's a wonderful person. Yes. This is great.
Also, in university, I studied theater for young audiences. I haven't done anything that is sort of for young audiences in quite some time, so this was a good opportunity to get back.
Have you done many of the Dudney pantomimes? Or
I have done none of the Dudney pantomimes.
Okay.
Usually because of conflicts with dates and stuff. So, not because I didn't want to.
And so how, Ollie, did you find out about this production?
My mom saw it on Facebook.
Oh, okay.
It's much more simple, to be honest.
I think it's a lot more complicated than that. So your mom saw this on Facebook. Do you do a lot of performing as a young man?
Yes, I do. I was in lots of productions at school, outside of school as well. And I was just really missing theater. And I thought
What productions outside of school have you done?
I've been in The Hobbit, which was at my local junior high.
Nice.
In like an independent theater group. We did Alice in Wonderland. We did some original plays. They were all really short. We had mm-hmm. like probably 5 audience members and it wasn't super big scale, but it definitely helped me in my audition for Hansel and Gretel.
And is this your first community theater experience with a group of adults and other strangers and not connected to school or church or anything like that?
Yes. Yes. Well, it's my first, especially with the Dudney players. And I was not expecting that I would get Hansel. I thought, well,
Maybe an elf.
Maybe I'll be, I don't know, maybe a little kid or something.
Well, that's wonderful.
Yes.
So what was your audition like?
I was kind of terrified, as most auditions go. But I just thought, well, whatever. I just want to be part of something. And I want to be in theater again. It had been a while. And I just went in and I read some scripts from movies, and it was magical.
Great. So was there a cold read or did they have to memorize something? What was your expectations for the auditioners?
Only cold read.
Okay.
I knew that if I had a lot of inexperienced young actors come, sometimes they can be afraid of memorizing a monologue.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to just do cold reads for that reason, but also I wanted to see how people could read for different characters as well.
Right.
So I pulled excerpts from other shows or movies that were like the characters, the different characters. So sometimes someone would come in and I would say, okay, can you read this part? And it would be somebody from Mean Girls, mm-hmm. you know, and then I would have them read another part. It was from, you know, Rapunzel from Tangled. So it gave me the opportunity to see if they could fit multiple roles and which one, you know, that way at the end of the day or the 2 days, I could go, this person was great at this character and maybe stronger in this character, not so strong as this character. So
you can put that whole jigsaw puzzle together to create a show. Was there callbacks?
No.
Wow. How hard was the decision to make to put this cast together?
It actually was not.
Really?
It was crazy.
You can leave now then. Yeah. It was not hard.
I'll tell you though, my heart was racing and I was on edge to see who would email back and accept the role or say, you know what, I can't, came up, because that's also, it's a big thing, you know, roadblock sometimes. Yeah. You have the multiple points you have to kind of get past. One's the audition. Do you have enough people show up?
Yeah.
Did you like the talent? Do we have enough talent to choose from?
Did you get the right people?
Did we get the right people? And once you send the casting notice out, are they going to accept?
Yeah, because as soon as that one person, if Hansel hadn't said yes to her, if Ollie had said, I don't think that's right for me, well, your whole house of cards can fall.
Throws it all off.
Absolutely.
Every single one of them accepted.
That's, I mean.
Crazy.
Ugh.
Yeah.
It's perfect.
We've had challenges, trust me.
The challenges come in other challenges. Ways, right?
Yeah.
Like that's a component to that. So how many people are in this show?
16.
Oh, that's not so bad. That's a nice sized cast. It's big for the RPAC.
It's big for the RPAC.
But it's not like a 28 person pantomime.
Correct.
Or something like that. So
yeah.
You're not so badly off. But you mentioned scheduling issues, and was it largely due to school vacations and whatnot?
And sports activities and music lessons and yeah. So
music lessons.
Yeah.
Goodness me.
I know.
I was telling my actors, I'm like, if you're going to be in a show, you have to defer your music lessons for the 3 months of the show. You're not going to not come to rehearsal because you got to go practice piano on a Wednesday night. You have other things to work on.
I know. But you know what?
Tell people that, though.
You can't. As the daughter of a classical musician, I understand how important those music lessons are.
They're not that important for the 3 months that you'd be in the show. If a rehearsal's on that night, move your piano lesson.
Yeah. But
just telling you.
But
that.
Again, like I have people that can't do on the weekends because of hockey and, until mid-March. And so it was a huge puzzle.
Did those restrictions impact your casting choices, or did you not know about those scheduling difficulties until after the casting?
I knew most of them because on the audition form, I asked everybody to disclose any kind of, weekly lesson you have or vacation already planned and this and that. So for the most part, I knew almost everything ahead of time.
Did you know about Brad's going to Australia in July?
Yeah.
Did that?
Well, I talk about it a lot, I'm sure she knew about it.
Did that almost prohibit his cast?
Well, what's funny is like when I was rewriting the script and I had written, kind of done some work on the part of the father, I saw Brad in this role.
Oh.
And so the whole time I was writing it, I could not get him out of my head for this role. So I didn't want to be like, so are you going to audition? How about now? So, I think I mentioned it to him and he said, well, I'm going to Australia. I'm not sure. Well, when are you going to Australia this time? Oh, no, we're good.
Oh, so you had no idea that she'd basically written this role for you?
Not until after. She did tell me after, but I had no idea before going in.
Well, that must make it a lot easier, right? When you're like, I envisioned you when I wrote this. Oh, then anything I do will be right.
Yeah, it's been a really fun show, and I guess I can see me in the part of the father. I'm just fun.
Well, that's great. So rehearsals were 3 days a week. What were the rehearsal schedule like, and when did you start?
3 days a week. We started like 2 weeks after audition, so early February.
Okay.
Is when we started.
Is there music and dancing too, or is it just straight? So
there's no singing.
Okay.
It's not a musical.
Okay.
But I'm getting close to it. there's a lot of music in the show, a lot of different kinds of music, a lot of different genres. And I had to completely create a new way for the witch to be able to get those kids into the oven.
Okay.
Because it was written that she rides a broom and then the kids ride the broom into the oven, which we don't have an automation department at Dudney Players. So we couldn't make that happen. Right. So I used music and dance to get the kids into the oven in a really interesting, different way.
Well, it makes me really want to go to the Goodman Theater in Chicago to see how they did a broom into an oven. But that's not something that's related to this. So rehearsals were what days of the week for you?
Monday, Thursday, and Saturday.
Monday, Thursday, Saturday?
Yep. 3 hours straight.
Were you one of these people that had, piano lessons on a Thursday and you couldn't come?
I was not.
Oh, good for you.
Thank you. I know. I've done this before.
What was it like joining with the cast? Did they all become close friends and family? Have they turned into this like special group that you're working towards putting something together for?
Absolutely. Yes.
And what did
Again,
you find?
That word. But yes, they're all so incredibly talented. And just like Kelly said, they're all so perfect for each of their roles. And they're all like they walked straight out of the Grimm fairy tale.
Oh, that's wonderful. What's been hard then for you about this production?
To be honest, just the late nights. I mean, I'm a kid in school and sometimes we go to 9:30 and sometimes we go to 9:45. And I expect that the closer we get to performance week, it'll be later, but it's manageable.
Load in week will definitely be later.
Yeah.
You work on, you go to school online. You just pop open the laptop when you wake up.
Yeah, I know. I've definitely got it easier than the other kids.
Yeah, absolutely. How has it been hard for you?
I think the hardest thing about this production for me was doing two shows at once. So doing the one act and also juggling it with Hansel and Gretel, that was the most challenging, only because of learning the lines.
Wow.
My brain isn't as good as it used to be when I was younger, so it's harder. I found as I've aged, it's harder for me to retain lines.
Yep.
And juggling two shows at once was difficult, I found.
Absolutely. But as a director yourself, don't you normally dislike when actors do two shows at the same time?
Well, my director was in the other show too, so...
Because I've always found it very difficult if an actor decides to be in two shows at the same time. Like, if you're rehearsing for this one while you're in that one, you should have just been in this one. There's enough actors out there, so you don't have to do multiple things at one time. Now, maybe the one act's a little bit different, but...
Yeah, I think the one act's a whole different beast. It's obviously a shorter show.
It's much more of an intensive than a show.
We were only doing one rehearsal a week for that show. I knew I would be able to attend them because the director of the other show was in the one act.
Wow.
So it was easy to juggle the two shows. I found the memorizing of the lines... Absolutely. The most difficult. The two characters were so different from each other, so that was not an issue I didn't find. It was just retaining the lines.
Yeah, I can't imagine there are performers out there in Calgary that are in two shows at almost the same time. The run of the show will lead right up until the tech week of the next show, and their rehearsals almost overlap, and they're doing six nights a week of rehearsals, and then they miss a big chunk because they have to do the tech week and the run of the one show that they're in before they come back to the other. I can't imagine myself wanting that stress and wanting that, and it becomes more like... For me, community theater, doing a show has always been about building a new group of friends and a new family. Yeah. And when you're doing two shows at the same time, how do you really get to know anybody? But anyway, that's just on me. What's been hard about this for you? Kelly Kozak, director, junior property assistant manager, set designers, you know, advisor.
Choreographer.
Also choreographer because of the music that's been added and the dancing that's now occurring. I have to
say, some of the dance, the one in particular, I just absolutely love every time we do it in rehearsal, the elf. I just love that dance.
Thank you.
I've never seen
love
it.
Love it.
You're not on stage.
You're sleeping. No, she's sleeping.
I'm sleeping on stage. Yeah.
So you're on stage, but resting. That's the best. Yeah. That's the best moments.
Yeah, it's all right. But it's like 30 minutes, right? So I don't know.
You're asleep for 30 minutes on stage?
It's about.
Close to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's like a third of the show.
Yep.
Wow.
And get a little power nap in. Mm-hmm.
Do you find yourself ever genuinely nodding off?
No, because I'm so focused on what I'm going to say when I wake up. And I'm also so focused that...
But
I'm,
for half an hour.
I know, it's half an hour. And my body falls asleep and I'm laying on Gretel, who's played by Haley. And after we get up, we just have to immediately start running and hope that we don't fall over because our limbs are asleep.
Oh my goodness. So what's been hard for you?
How much time do we have left? Letting go of some of the ideas that you have in the beginning is that's a big thing, but you have to do it. You have to know when, okay, this was the vision for this, but it's not working. Let's change it. You know, I think that's just something that's really important. You have to be able to do that in order to, for the production, for the sake of the show, to make it where it needs to be. Sometimes it's letting go because you sit on this for a good 8-9 months thinking that you have it in your head how it's going to be. And then it's just being able to adapt that.
So what have you had to change?
Just some of the concepts. And I've gone through so many different ways of how to get the kids into the oven since I started.
Right.
What if we did this? What if we built this? What if we... And each one was just like, no, that's not going to work. No, that's not going to work either. Well, what do we do? Like, I want it to be something different and I want it to be cool. And I won't give away specifics of exactly what that is.
I mean, you can give away specifics because we're all just envisioning it in our head. We won't be able to see it on the stage.
No.
And then this podcast will exist well after the show is done.
True.
So it'd be great to know what you did because otherwise we will never know. I realized this recently that the podcast will exist and people are like, oh, I don't want to give spoilers. I'm like, people are going to listen to this after the show. It's not a spoiler then. They could never see it. You will never get to see this if you don't come see the show.
That's true. So as I said, I was raised with classical musicians, so music was really important, and ended up coming up with this idea that the witch is a lover of music, many different genres of music, and this one piece in particular, the Dance of the Macabre by Camille Saint-Saëns. And it's this really, it was composed based on all of the spirits and the ghosts and all of the entities coming out from the ground for one night until the stroke of midnight when they had to go back in.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the piece of music I used for her to dance the kids into the oven. So they do this waltz, and one by one, she takes the kids with this piece of music and waltzes them into the oven. And that was a way for me to incorporate transportation to get them from one place to another by using dance. It's fulfilled my love for dance. And that piece of music is just seems so fitting to be able to, like, here you go, into your death.
Wow. So do spirits rise up and take them in, or do they just dance themselves in?
The witch throws them in.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
One by one. And they turn into gingerbread kids. So
that's amazing.
Yeah. So yeah, there's just a lot of little fun little things that I've incorporated that I hope other people notice when they watch the show, just the different bits of music. And
what's something that audiences might overlook when they see this show, Brad? From what you've seen with your enjoyment of what's going on stage, is there anything that's going on stage or whatnot that's happening that people might not get a chance to see, or they might be looking somewhere else and they really should be looking there?
Well, there's probably a couple, because especially for Act One, the stage is split in two. So there's the outside area and then there's the inside the house. And when stuff's happening outside, there are people still in the house, which, not to take away from what's actually happening outside, but there is still action happening at the table. So they might miss some of the little nuances between the mother and father when they're sitting at the table. And I don't know if people would miss it, but the way the cat gets off stage in Act Two.
Look for that. Look for how the cat gets off stage.
I don't know if you're kind of hard to miss, but my gosh, it's funny.
It's one of your highlight moments.
That's one of my highlight moments.
Oh, that's great. How about for you? What's something you think that the audience might miss that you'd want to share with the listener so they keep an eye out for it?
There's this like little scene in Act One where the kids get into this tapping game and they're tapping each other on the shoulder. And there's this one kid and he's not the brightest and he has lots of little funny lines here and there. And the actor, he's so incredible. And he always does these.
And who is he?
Calvin Berrigan. And he is excellent. He's really, really great at sort of visually showing his character, even when he doesn't have a line. And I really don't want the audience to miss him because I think he could totally be a fan favorite.
Oh, that's great. Who does he play?
He plays Johan, which is one of the little children.
It turns into a gingerbread man?
Yes.
I love it. I cannot wait. And how about for you? What's something you don't want audiences to miss?
I put a few Easter eggs in the show. A couple of them have to do with my homage to other witches in history and stories, movie stories. So there's a couple little Easter eggs, like a nod to other witches.
Like who?
Hocus Pocus witches. Wicked Witch of the West.
Mm-hmm. It's just those two so far? Just those ones?
Nice.
There's no White Queen from Narnia in there?
No, there's no White Queen.
No, it's too bad. I always feel like she's one of the greatest witches of all time.
She's pretty bad. Yeah.
She's just so heinous. Yeah,
she's pretty amazing.
She ruined an entire world and then decided, oh, I'm going to ruin another world. That's the worst. Nobody else ruins two worlds.
Actually, I will say this, that during rehearsals, Ollie came up with this fantastic idea.
Oh, what's this?
Which ends up being another Easter egg in the show.
Oh.
It's after the witch meets her demise.
Excellent, as they all should.
So she goes into the oven.
Yeah.
And then Ollie gets this idea of, what if we did this? Because the script kind of
alludes
sets
to it.
Yeah. Up for this, not intentionally.
Mm-hmm.
And so Ollie said, well, I say this, and they say this. And then what if the witch said this?
What? The witch is in the oven.
In the oven.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
And I said, amazing. We're keeping it.
Yes.
Oh, that's great. How did that make you feel, Ollie?
Amazing. I love to be part of the script. And it's probably one of my favorite parts of the play.
So are you giving him a writing credit then?
Yeah, I'm going to be in the playbook as a writer.
That's wonderful. This show opens on April 26th and runs through till May 11th. That is not a short run. That's a pretty substantial run. Have you done any runs that are this long, this length before?
Absolutely not. No.
What are you looking forward to about such a long run?
I'm really excited that maybe people will see it and then maybe, I don't know, come back for another one and then notice something new, because there are a lot of hidden Easter eggs. Mm-hmm. And I've never done one that's spanned multiple weeks. So I'm very excited for all the audiences that it's going to hit. And there's always going to be someone in the crowd who's seeing it for the first time. And it's just as exciting each time.
Well, that's amazing. And what are you going to remember from having done this show, Brad?
I think I'm going to remember all the new friends that I've made,
yeah.
Which we talked about earlier, that that's one of the reasons we get involved with community theater,
right?
Is you get to meet a lot of new, fascinating people. And this show is no different. There's a lot of newbies for Dudney in this show. A lot of people who have come out for the first time, and getting to know them has just been wonderful.
Oh, that's great. I'll just do an add to that too. When you do a show with young people, I've always found it is so inspiring that you get to be kind of a mentor, and you're kind mm-hmm. of a person that shows the ropes to a young person who doesn't really know, you know, how do we act here? What is our responsibility? How do we show deference to the director, and how do we show the respect to the property and the material that we're doing? And then they go on to do amazing things. They mm-hmm. leave the country and they go to London and they become fancy opera singers, or they go to Toronto yeah. and become film actors. And you know that you had a hand in molding and shaping them in that small time that you had when you did that production, that community yeah. theater show together.
That's pretty cool. Yeah.
Don't let them forget you, Brad.
Okay.
All these young people, be that role model so that they go off into the world and they're like, I want to be like Brad. I remember when he was so kind and said these nice things. And how about you? What are you going to remember from this painstaking, arduous, time-consuming, all-encompassing thing that's been in your life for the last year?
I hope I will take away from that the sense of being able to create magic for people and have anyone who comes and experiences it to experience that magic as well. Whether it's people just sitting in there, walking into the art pack and feeling like they are have just walked into the forest and for the next hour and a half completely just escaped all reality and are immersed in this experience. And the actors as well, fostering new actors and talent and inspiring them to go on to continue to do this.
Well, that's amazing. And good art should change the viewer in some capacity. Good art makes you walk away thinking new things and having new thoughts. What is the audience going to take away from having seen Hansel and Gretel, Ollie?
Don't trust witches in the forest. That's going, like, don't trust strangers. I think that's going to be the big one.
That is definitely one of the big ones there, isn't it?
Yeah, the Brothers Grimm would be very proud. Yeah, but seriously, I think there's a big sense of family, I think,
mm-hmm.
between the siblings, between the parents. But there's also a sense of magic with sort of folklore-ish characters. And I think it's just really beautiful and magical. And they'll walk out of the art pack thinking, wow, that was amazing. I hope.
Well, that's great. What do you think, Brad?
I think that the audience should get a sense of community. From my character anyway, they would see that no matter how tough times are, that always being positive, always being kind to other people will get you a good result in the end. Mm-hmm. So he tries to teach his children that. He tries to rub off on his wife as, you know, be a little bit kinder. Don't be so mean to the children. And I think in the end, it comes across as, you know what, if you are good to people, good things will happen.
Well, that's great. Before we get to you, because you've given a lot of time to think about this, this is an easy one because this is a fairy tale. Mm. It's Hansel and Gretel. And so the message of Hansel and Gretel is that working together and thinking ahead can help a person get out of even the most dangerous situations. Hansel and Gretel always worked together and looked out for each other. Both characters make plans that help them to survive many dangerous situations, which is a great lesson about thinking ahead and working together will get you through for kids when they're growing up. And that's when I read this story to my kids. It's largely what we talked about, is how they worked together. They didn't fight to get out of all of the predicaments that they find themselves in. What is it for you? What should audiences take away there, Kelly?
To put it simply, that the impossible is possible. Whether that be taking a message from the story or somebody saying, holy crap, I didn't think you could fit all that stuff on the RPAC stage. Whatever it is, I love and kind of inspiring people to go, you know what? That was possible. And nope, we didn't think it was, but it happened, whatever that may be.
Well, the impossible will be made possible starting April 26th. The link to tickets are in the show notes. And you owe it to yourself, gentle listener, to go and experience the wonderment and excitement that you definitely can feel from these people. They've put a ton of time and effort into creating something that will give you a lasting memory for time to come, not only for you, the audience, but for everyone who's been part of this production. Thank you all for listening.